You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right. Good morning, everyone. We're on the record now on Fremont County, KCR 22211623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. Let me confirm with our tech people and clerks, here is the broadcast on. Thank you. The court will note that as we get started, there is a courtroom conduct order in effect that you've all been advised. Please pay attention to the terms of that order, including making sure you don't have any devices that would go off and interrupt the proceedings, no recording within this courtroom or photography of any type. The court is providing public access through the open proceedings as well as the live stream that's being conducted. With the court's live stream, we have, I think, the technology in place to accomplish that. If something comes up that interrupts the live broadcast of this trial, and this will be throughout the trial, we'll give an opportunity to try to get that started again. However, if there's going to be any kind of significant delay in the live stream broadcast, the court will be continuing on with the proceedings. So there may be gaps in that, but I think our technology is in place that hopefully that won't occur. But just so those listening in understand, if it does come up, we likely will not pause the trial longer than necessary to make that accommodation. At this time, I'll note also for the benefit of counsel, we do have all 18 jurors. Our 12 jurors with six alternates have arrived this morning, and everyone has submitted their juror affirmation sheet regarding following the court's admonishment while they've gone. No issues to bring up on the affirmations of the jurors. So with that in mind, then let me go to the state, knowing the state is here present. Is the state ready to proceed this morning?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
And is the defense ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, counsel. All right. Before we bring the jurors in, which we'll do very shortly here, I also, as we are getting started and before the jurors are sworn and we take evidence, is there, I believe, we've already had a motion to exclude witnesses. Let me just clarify on the record, is there going to be a motion to exclude witnesses through evidence portion of the trial made by the defense?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well. The court will reaffirm then there has been a motion to exclude witnesses. So as the state begins with its case in chief, keep that in mind that they are not permitted to observe the trial proceedings, including the live stream. The only exception would be for a witness. If they statutorily qualify as a victim, then they are permitted to observe the proceedings. So each witness is going to be questioned whether or not they've observed any trial proceedings, and I would instruct the state and then follow the defense if they have witnesses to make sure that the exclusionary rule is followed. Does the state have any questions on that matter?
Your Honor, the state would just clarify and just make counsel and the court aware. It's the state's understanding that through the Constitution and statutorily, victims have a right to remain in the courtroom throughout the proceedings, regardless of whether or not they are victims. And we have discussed that with defense counsel and made the court aware of who we think there may be a crossover with, meaning individuals that may be present and also witnesses. But statutorily, they would have the right to be here. So including any of the defendant's children, as well as, since they were Tammy's children, as well as siblings, sometimes grandparents, The court made a ruling last year in the Lori Vallow case. I think if we're following a similar guideline, those are the individuals that we would just note for the record may be present at times, but should have the right to be present throughout the proceedings. In addition, I would just note for the record that we do have our case agent who will be present for the duration of the proceedings, and that's Chief Deputy Vince Kaikamani.
Okay, and the state's permitted their case agent. As it relates to victims, the court agrees they are permitted to see the proceedings, including if they are a witness, who would take up on a witness-by-witness basis whether or not they fall within the statutory qualifications permitting that. And I know the state's aware of the issue. We'll make rulings if contested as to whether or not they would qualify and later called to testify. Mr. Pryor from the defense, any further comment or questions on the exclusionary ruling?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. All right, at this time then we will have the jurors brought in.
Yes, sir.
All rise. All of the jurors present and accounted for.
All right, thank you, Mr. Bale. Please be seated. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. We're on the record on Fremont County, KCR 22-21-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Abel. We're ready to proceed with opening arguments and initial instructions this morning to you as jurors. The court notes that the prosecution is present as well as the defendant and the defense attorney representing him as well. We have qualified this panel of 18 jurors consisting of our 12 jurors with 6 alternates, and they are now seated for trial. Let me start with the state and ask, will the state agree that the jury has now been properly seated and ready to be sworn?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you.
Will the defense agree as well?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, thank you for returning this morning. You're now seated as jurors in the case before us. As previously been told, I'm Stephen W. Voice, the district judge of Fremont County in charge of this courtroom trial. I'll briefly reintroduce you to some of our court personnel assisting here today. Shannon Polstein, seated to my right, is the clerk who is keeping minutes of the trial proceedings, will be marking trial exhibits and administering oaths to you as jurors and to the witnesses. We do have our courtroom bailiffs as well who assist with keeping order in the courtroom and helping the jury move about where they're supposed to throughout the day and then enforcing any conduct orders we have in effect here for the trial. Our court reporter today, Amy Bland, is taking a stenographic record of everything said during the trial proceedings. And my staff attorney, Courtney Stallings, is seated to the far right, who assists me with legal research and administrative matters that come throughout each day of trial. Each one of you has been qualified, examined, and selected to serve as a juror of this court. The clerk will now have a roll call of our seated jurors. Please, Madam Clerk, if you would conduct the roll call. As to each juror, once your juror number is announced, please just indicate present or here verbally so we acknowledge that on the record. Madam Clerk.
Juror 25, present. Juror 219,
present.
Juror 505,
here.
Juror 631,
here.
Juror 653?
Here.
Juror 686?
Present.
Juror 752?
Present.
Juror 1680?
Present.
Juror 823?
Here.
Juror 1358?
Here.
Juror 1365?
Here.
Juror 716?
Here.
Juror 751?
Here.
Juror 997?
Here.
Juror 1078?
Here.
Juror 1577?
Here.
Juror 1271? Juror 1382?
Present.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. This case has been brought by the state of Idaho. I'll sometimes refer to the state as the prosecution. The state is here represented in this trial by Lindsay Blake, Fremont County prosecutor. Ms. Blake, could you please stand briefly? Also, Rob Wood is the Madison County prosecutor. Ingrid Beatty is a special assistant prosecutor. And Rocky Wixom is a Fremont County deputy prosecutor. The defendant in this case, Mr. Daybell, is represented by his attorney, John Byer. Thank you, counsel. In a few moments, the clerk will read you a redacted version of the amended indictment in this case. That document is not to be considered as evidence. It sets forth the charges against the defendant. You must not consider it as evidence of guilt and not be influenced by the fact that charges have been filed. Mr. Daybell has pled not guilty to the charges contained in the amended indictment. And please remember, again, it's a description of charges. It is not evidence. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove his innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crimes beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from a lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. The duty of the jury is to determine the facts and then apply the law set forth in the instructions I will later give you to those facts. In this way, you will decide the case. In applying the court's instructions as to the controlling law, you must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is or what the law should be or what any lawyer may state the law to be. During this course of the trial, including opening statements, you're instructed that you are not to discuss this case among yourselves or with anyone else, including using the internet or social media or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet, and do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. The court's given you that instruction now multiple times, and I will continue to give you that instruction. And again, that's not because I don't think you're not paying attention. It's just important enough. We'll keep reiterating that. And I will note we received the juror affirmations today from each of the jurors indicating they have followed that instruction. So thank you for that. At this time then, the next matter we'll take up is to have this jury placed under oath for trial. At this time then, Madam Clerk, if you're ready to administer the oath, I'll have the juror stand and will be placed under oath. When you stand, then please raise your right hands.
You solemnly swear or affirm you will try the cause now on trial and a true verdict render here in according to the law and the evidence. So help you God.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. All right, the jurors have already been advised of some of our trial procedures in this case, and I'll just give you some additional general information here. Our normal schedule is to run trial from 8:30 each day until 3:30. At times that will need to be modified for certain reasons. Sometimes we have matters to be argued outside of your presence. Sometimes during the recesses, they may seem to go long because we're conducting other court business outside of your presence. But we will take recesses through the morning and also in the afternoon. If anyone is uncomfortable, needs a break or recess for some specific reason, please notify the bailiff and we'll do our best to accommodate each of you and keep you comfortable while you're here. In addition, if anyone has any kind of accommodations they need, for example, assistance with a hearing device, other matters, please notify the bailiff again, and we want to make sure you are as comfortable as you can be and able to be alert and attentive throughout the presentation of evidence in the case. These seats that you have been assigned to at this time will be your specific seat throughout the trial. Please return to that same assigned seat each day or after each break so that we are able to determine who's here and if someone's not, for some reason, who's not here. If there are interruptions at times during the trial, I know that can be frustrating, but we'll work our best to keep those to a minimum, move the trial as long as efficiently as possible, but at times it just takes time to hear motions that are necessary outside of your presence. And then the courtroom and your location for deliberations, as well as during the trial where you'll be held, we've provided of course, access to restrooms and other needs you may have. I'll address your compensation here. State law allows you for $10 a day for your jury service. However, after 5 days, that bumps up to $40 a day. So this trial is expected to go some time. You'll likely get into that increased range of compensation, and that's pursuant to Idaho Code 2215. You're also entitled, I believe, to a mileage reimbursement for travel each day, and that can further be explained to you if you have any questions. Also, you may notice from time to time, or a lot of the time, I'm looking at monitors here during the trial. I do have case information here, availability to access and research things from the bench, and so if you notice me looking at those monitors, it's generally to assist me in trial issues that come up. At this time, then, the court will provide the jury with some additional jury instructions. As I read through these, it's somewhat lengthy, and I will notify you that you don't have to necessarily memorize everything I'm saying. When the trial is concluded and you deliberate, you will have printed copies of these instructions to return to for reference. And if you'll give me just a moment here, I have a brief inquiry to make with my staff attorney. All right, thank you. Now that you've been sworn as jurors to try this case, I'll go over with you what will be happening. I will describe how the trial will be conducted and what we will be doing. At the end of the trial, I'll give you more detailed guidance on how you are to reach your decision. Because the state has the burden of proof, it goes first. After the state's opening statement, the defense may make an opening statement or may wait until the state has presented its case. The state will offer evidence that it says will support the charges against the defendant. The defense may then present evidence but is not required to do so. If the defense does present evidence, the state may then present rebuttal evidence. This is evidence offered to answer the defense's evidence. After you have heard all of the evidence, I will give you additional instructions on the law. After you have heard the instructions, the state and the defense will each be given time for closing arguments. In their closing arguments, they will summarize the evidence to help you understand how it relates to the law. Just as the opening statements are not evidence, neither are the closing arguments. After the closing arguments, you will leave the courtroom together to make your decision. During your deliberations, you will have with you my instructions, the exhibits admitted into evidence, and any notes taken by you in court. The defendant is charged by the state of Idaho with a violation of law. The charges against the defendant are contained in the amended indictment. The amended indictment is simply a description of the charges. It is not evidence. Jury instruction number three. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, has been charged in the amended indictment with certain counts of entering into a conspiracy with Lori Bella Daybell and or Alex Cox and or other co-conspirators. The crime of conspiracy involves an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. You must only consider the evidence against the defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, in this case, and should not speculate as to any other case or legal proceedings involving any alleged co-conspirators. You must remember that the defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, has the presumption of innocence, and you must consider his guilt or innocence based solely on the evidence provided in this case. Instruction number four, it is alleged that the crimes charged were committed on or about or on or between a certain date. If you find a crime was committed, the proof need not show that it was committed on that precise date. Instruction number five. Under our law and system of justice, the defendant is presumed to be innocent. Presumption of innocence means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove his innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from lack of evidence. If, after considering all the evidence, you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. Jury instruction number six. A defendant in a criminal trial has a constitutional right not to be compelled to testify. The decision whether to testify is left to the defendant, acting with the advice and assistance of the defendant's lawyer. You must not draw any inference of guilt from the fact that the defendant may not testify, nor should this fact be discussed by you or enter into your deliberations in any way. Jury instruction number seven. If during the trial I may say or do anything which suggests to you that I am inclined to favor the claims or positions of any party, you will not permit yourself to be influenced by any such suggestion. I will not express, nor intend to express, nor will I intend to intimate any opinion as to which witnesses are or are not worthy of belief, what facts are or are not established, or what inferences should be drawn from the evidence. If any expression of mine seems to indicate an opinion relating to any of these matters, I will instruct you to disregard it. Jury instruction number eight. Your duties are to determine the facts, to apply the law set forth in my instructions to those facts, and in this way to decide the case. In doing so, you must follow my instructions regardless of your own opinion of what the law is or should be, or what either side may state the law to be. You must consider them as a whole, not picking out one and disregarding others. The order in which the instructions are given has no significance as to their relative importance. The law requires that your decision be made solely upon the evidence before you. Neither sympathy nor prejudice should influence you in your deliberations. Faithful performance by you of these duties is vital to the administration of justice. In determining the facts, you may consider only the evidence admitted in this trial. This evidence consists of the testimony of the witnesses, the exhibits offered and received, and any stipulated or admitted facts. The production of evidence in court is governed by rules of law. At times during the trial, an objection may be made to a question asked a witness or to a witness's answer or to an exhibit. This simply means I'm being asked to decide a particular rule of law. Arguments on the admissibility of evidence are designed to aid the court and are not to be considered by you nor affect your deliberations. If I sustain an objection to a question or to an exhibit, the witness may not answer the question or the exhibit may not be considered. Do not attempt to guess what the answer might have been or what the exhibit might have shown. Similarly, if I tell you not to consider a particular statement or exhibit, you should put it out of your mind and not refer to it or rely on it in your later deliberations. During the trial, I may have to talk with the parties about the rules of law which should apply to this case. Sometimes that will occur over on the corner there, and we do have a device here that whites out the noise, so you can't hear us speaking there. At other times, I'll excuse you from the courtroom so that you can be comfortable while we work out any problems with evidence. You are not to speculate about any such discussions. They are necessary from time to time to help the trial run more smoothly. Some of you have probably heard the terms circumstantial evidence, direct evidence, and hearsay evidence. Do not be concerned with these terms. You are to consider all the evidence admitted in this trial. However, the law does not require you to believe all of the evidence. As the sole judges of the facts, you must determine what evidence you believe and what weight you attach to it. There is no magical formula by which one may evaluate testimony. You bring with you to this courtroom all the experience and background of your lives. In your everyday affairs, you determine for yourselves whom you believe, what you believe, and how much weight you attach to what you are told. The same considerations that you use in your everyday dealings and making these decisions are the considerations which you must apply in deliberations. In deciding what you believe, do not make your decision simply because more witnesses may have testified one way than the other. Your role is to think about the testimony of each witness you heard and decide how much you believe of what the witness had to say. A witness who has special knowledge in a particular matter may give an opinion on that matter. In determining the weight to be given such an opinion, you should consider the qualifications and credibility of the witness and the reasons given for the opinion. You are not bound by such opinion. Give it the weight, if any, to which you deem it entitled. During instruction number 9, at the conclusion of the trial, you will decide as to each charge whether the state has proved the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. The subject of penalty or punishment is not to be discussed or considered by you in making these decisions. That is a matter which must not in any way affect your verdict. Jury instruction number 10. The state is seeking the death penalty in this case. If the defendant is convicted of murder in the first degree, there will then be a separate sentencing phase of the trial. At that sentencing phase, additional evidence may be presented and the jury will be given additional instructions. At the conclusion of that hearing, the jury will then decide if the defendant will be sentenced to death. If the jury decides that the defendant will not be sentenced to death, either the defendant will be sentenced to a term of life imprisonment without the possibility of parole, or the judge will sentence the defendant to a term of life imprisonment during which the defendant could not be paroled for at least 10 years and possibly for life. Jury instruction number 11. If you wish, you may take notes to help you remember what witnesses said. If you do take notes, please keep them to yourself until after you and your fellow jurors go to the jury room to decide the case. You should not let note-taking distract you so that you do not hear other answers by witnesses. When you leave at night, you'll leave your notes here with the bailiffs. If you do not take notes, you should rely on your own memory of what was said and not be overly influenced by the notes of other jurors. In addition, you cannot assign one person the duty of taking notes for all of you. Jury instruction number 12. It is important that as jurors and officers of this court, you obey the following instructions at any time you leave the jury box, whether it be for recesses of the court during the day or when you leave the courtroom to go home at night. First, do not talk about the case among yourselves or with anyone else during the course of the trial. You should keep an open mind throughout the trial and not form or express an opinion about the case. You should only reach your decision after you have heard all the evidence, after you have heard my final instructions, and after the final arguments. You may discuss this case with the other members of the jury only after it is submitted to you for your decision. All such discussions should take place in the jury room. Second, do not let any person talk about the case in your presence. If anyone does talk about it to you, tell them you're a juror of the case. If they won't stop talking, then report that to the bailiff or courtroom staff or as soon as you're able to do that. You should not tell your fellow jurors about what has happened. Third, during this trial, do not talk with any of the parties, their lawyers, or any witnesses. By this, I mean not only do not talk about the case, but do not talk at all, even to pass the time of day. In no other way can all parties be assured of the fairness they are entitled to expect from you as jurors. Fourth, during this trial, do not make any investigation of this case or inquiry outside of the courtroom on your own. Do not go to any place mentioned in the testimony without an order of the court to do so. You must not consult any books, records, internet, or any other source of information unless I specifically authorize you to do so. Fifth, do not read about the case in the newspapers. Do not listen to radio or television broadcasts about the trial. You must base your verdict solely on what is presented in court and not upon any newspaper, radio, television, or other media account of what may have happened. Each day, you will be required, as I mentioned, to sign an affirmation that you will follow this admonition of the court. That concludes the court's first instructions then, and as I mentioned, we will be providing copies of those when we deliberate for further reference. Next, at this time then, I am going to have the clerk read the amended and redacted indictment to you. Madam Clerk, if you're ready to read the amended indictment, please do that at this time.
In the District Court of the 7th Judicial District of the State of Idaho and in for the County of Fremont. State of Idaho Plaintiff versus Chad Gaydell Defendant, case number CR22211623, amended indictment. Chad Gaydell is accused by the grand jury of Fremont County of this indictment as follows. Count 1, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception. The defendants, Chad Gaydell and or Lori Noreen Ballow and or Alex Cox, deceased, and or other co-conspirators, both known and unknown, on or between the dates of October 26, 2018, and continuing until January 15, 2020, in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, and elsewhere, including Fremont County, Idaho, and as part of a continuing criminal transaction and common scheme or plan in Madison and Fremont counties, Idaho, that willfully and knowingly combine, conspire, confederate, and agree to commit murder in the first degree of Chiley Ryan and to commit grand theft by deception. Count 2, first degree murder. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, on or between the 8th and 9th day of September 2019, in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, and as part of a common scheme or plan for continuing criminal transactions in Madison and Fremont counties in Idaho, were concerned in the commission of a first degree murder and did aid and abet its commission, or not being present, advised and encouraged its commission, or by command compelled another to commit the crime, and did so with malice aforethought, and did so willfully, deliberately, and with premeditation, which resulted in the death of a human being, to wit, either killed Tylee Ryan and or assist in the killing of Tylee Ryan and or did encourage the killing of Tylee Ryan and or did command another to kill Tylee Ryan in violation of the oath. Count 3, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception. The defendants, Chad Guy Daybell and or Lori Noreen Ballow and or Alex Cox, deceased, and or other co-conspirators, both known and unknown, on or between the dates of October 26, 2018, and continuing until January 15, 2020, in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, and elsewhere, including Fremont County, Idaho, and as part of a continuing criminal transaction and common scheme or plan in Madison and Fremont Counties, Idaho, that willfully and knowingly combine, conspire, confederate, and agree to commit murder in the first degree of Joshua Jackson Ballow, here and after J.J. Ballow, and to commit grand theft by deception. Count 4, first degree murder. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, on or between the 8th and 9th day of September 2018, in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, and as part of a common scheme or plan for continuing criminal transactions between Madison and Fremont counties in Idaho, were concerned in the commission of a first degree murder and did aid and abet in its commission, were not being present, advised and encouraged its commission, or by command compelled another to commit the crime, and did so with malice aforethought, and did so willfully, deliberately, and with premeditation, which resulted in the death of a human being. To it, did either kill J.J. Ballow and or assist in the killing of J.J. Ballow, and or did encourage the killing of J.J. Ballow, and or did command another to kill J.J. Ballow, in violation of Idaho Code. Count 5, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. The defendants, Chad Guy Daybell and or Lori Noreen Ballow and or Alex Cox, deceased, and or other co-conspirators, both known and unknown, on or between the dates of October 26, 2018, and continuing until January 15, 2020, in the County of Fremont, State of Idaho, and elsewhere, including Madison County, Idaho, and as part of a continuing criminal transaction in common scheme or plan in Fremont and Madison Counties, Idaho, did willfully and knowingly combine, conspire, confederate, and agree to commit murder in the first degree of Tammy Daybell, and did combine, and did combine or conspire to commit murder, and one or more of such persons did an act to effect the object of the combination or conspiracy. Count 6, first degree murder. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, on October 18 to 19, 2019, in the County of Fremont, State of Idaho, was concerned in the commission of first degree murder and did aid and abet in its commission, or not being present, advised and encouraged its commission, or by command compelled another to commit the crime and did so with malice aforethought and did so willfully, deliberately, and with premeditation, which resulted in the death of a human being, to wit, did either kill Tammy Daybell and or assist in the killing of Tammy Daybell and or did encourage the killing of Tammy Daybell and or did command another to kill Tammy Daybell in violation of Idaho Code. Count 7, insurance fraud. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, on or about October 19, 2019, through October 30, 2019, in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, did with the intent to defraud or deceive an insurer for the purpose of obtaining any money or benefit, insurer, or other person, a statement as part of or in support of a claim for payment or benefit, knowing that such statement contained false, incomplete, or misleading information concerning any fact or thing material to such claim, to wit, did present and or cause to be presented an insurance beneficiary form to LifeMap Assurance Company in violation of Idaho Code. Count 9, insurance fraud. That the defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, on or about October 19, 2019 through October 31, 2019, in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, did with the intent to defraud or deceive an insurer for the purpose of obtaining any money or benefit, insurer, or other person, a statement as part of or in support of a claim for payment or benefit, knowing that such statement contained false, incomplete, or misleading information concerning any fact or material thing to such claim, to wit, did present and or cause to be presented an insurance beneficiary form to Primerica Life Insurance Company in violation of Idaho Code. Signed as a true bill on the 24th day of May, 2021, and signed by the Deputy Presiding Grand Juror, acting as Presiding Grand Juror in Fremont County, State of Idaho. And to these charges, the defendant has entered a plea of not guilty.
All right, thank you very much, Madam Clerk, for reading the redacted amended indictment. In this case, again, I will advise the jurors, remember the indictment is a description of charges. It is not evidence. That concludes the court's opening instructions and the reading of the indictment. The jury's been sworn as well. The next matter we would take up then are opening statements. We inquire of the state, is the state ready to proceed with openings?
Yes, Your Honor.
Who will be giving the opening statement?
I will remember.
Very well. Mr. Williams, you may present your opening.
Your Honor, may I inquire, is there a hand mic so that I may address the jury?
I think we do have one. Might take us a moment to get it over to you.
And then I do have a PowerPoint attached.
All right.
May I proceed your phone? Yes, it's from the HDMI. May I proceed, Your Honor?
Yes, Your
Honor. Two dead children buried in the defendant Chad Daybell's backyard in September of 2019. The next month, his wife is found dead in their marital bed. 17 days after the death of his wife, Tammy Daybell, this defendant is photographed laughing and dancing on a beach in Hawaii at his wedding. It's Lori Vallow. a woman who was his mistress and the mother of the children buried in the graves on his property. Three dead bodies. This defendant believed he had a right beyond the ordinary. When he had a chance at what he considered his rightful destiny, he made sure that no person or no law would stand in his way. His desire for sex, money, and power led him to pursue those ambitions. And this pursuit led to the deaths of his wife and Lori's two innocent children. Chad Daybell is an author who wrote books about the apocalypse. During this trial, you will hear a story more troubling. And the story is real. Chapter 1. The defendant was a seemingly ordinary man. You'll see that he craved significance. He worked in journalism, and he worked as a sexton in a graveyard. He married his wife Tammy in 1990 after meeting at Brigham Young University, and they settled in Utah. As a full-time homemaker and mother, Tammy's love for her family was boundless. Together, Tammy and the defendant started a small publishing company, which Tammy supported in many ways. They had five children together. They moved to Idaho, where Tammy became a beloved school librarian. She was devoted to service, her community, and her faith. But for this defendant, that ordinary existence was not enough. Chapter 2. Lori Vallow was a homemaker from Arizona. Your Honor, this mic just...
Sorry, Mr. Lee. Let's see if we get a replacement mic.
I think it's, I got it working now.
Okay.
I noticed that the PowerPoint is not up.
Yeah, I think your mic's off.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't turn it off this time, so I
you might have a bad battery. You want to have to confirm the screen as well.
Your Honor, it's up on the screen, and I can't explode to the HDMI. I'm not sure why it's not transferred. I don't know if there's any one person out there to get that.
Let's see if we can get some help to maybe see if we can get the signal to work on that.
Sorry. Can I proceed?
Yeah, but I'm still not sure I want to keep that up working.
Check.
Okay. Thanks. Apologies for the interruption. I can down.
Chapter 2. Lori Vallow was a homemaker from Arizona. She was married to her fourth husband, Charles Vallow. And she was the mother to Tylee Ryan and J.J. Vallow. Tylee was a normal, vibrant teenage girl. She loved her friends. You'll hear that she loved her tea. She loved Chipotle. She loved her little brother, J.J. J.J. was a seven-year-old boy on the autism spectrum. He required extensive special care needs. He loved his sister. You'll hear about a pivotal date that set in motion the deaths of Tammy, Tylee, and J.J. October 26, 2018. That was the day when Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow met at a religious conference in St. George, Utah, where they were introduced by a mutual acquaintance. At this time, both still married to other spouses. That introduction set in motion the reality you're going to hear about. We know what happened next through the defendant's own words. You'll hear. Though both married, Chad and Lori began to have an affair. You will hear excerpts from the defendant's extended text messages to Lori that reveal his mindset and his motivations. In his thirst for sex, power, and money, Chad created an alternate reality where they called themselves James and Elena. Names that Chad claimed were from past lives they had put together. The defendant's text messages reveal their story of lust and their plan for a future together. Chad Daybell wrote that upon meeting Lori Vallow, he experienced a happiness unmatched by anything else in his 50 years. He was captivated by her appearance, so much so he said she was out of his league. You will hear evidence in his own words how he was taken by her beauty and spoke about their sexual encounters on many occasions. More than anything else, Chad's obsession with Lori was rooted in her adoration for him. She was the mirror reflecting the grandeur he saw in himself. He called her an exalted goddess. He told her in writing that she had returned to Earth to perform a special mission. And part of that mission included being with him. They soon came together and turned their dreams into a plan for the future. One free from what they called obstacles. And those obstacles were Tylee, JJ, and Tammy. Chapter 3. You'll hear that in the world that Chad and Lori planned for themselves, they identified those who stood in the way of their dream as dark. Their spouses, Lori's own children, and any who opposed them were labeled sometimes as dark spirits or even zombies. This was more than an alleged belief of frightening labor. The evidence will show that it was a convenient narrative that dehumanized people who stood in their way and who were labeled as obstacles. This narrative gave them the pretext to remove people from this world for their own good. Chad and Lori preached that only through spiritual intervention, what they sometimes call casting, sometimes through burning, or even through death, could these dark spirits be cleansed. Enter Alex Cox, Lori's devoted brother. Chad and Lori manipulated Alex with promises of spiritual rewards. They wielded their influence over Alex, drawing him into their plotting and planning of their own future. After the deaths of Tylee, JJ, and Tammy, Chad Daybell gave Alex a blessing. This blessing was reported by Lori, who was present. And in that blessing, he said to Alex, "You have earned the privilege to be a member of their exclusive religious group." And he also said to him, "You have already assisted us in ways that can never be repaid." But you will also see other text messages. Chad and Lori discussed more earthly concerns, that Alex could be the one to implicate them. Alex knew this as well. Shortly before he died, on December 12, 2019, he told his wife, Zulana Pastenis, who you will hear from, he was afraid he was going to see Chad and Lori's fault that night. Chapter 4. Once their calculated plan was devised, it only took months to execute and remove perceived obstacles in Chad Daybell's path to a new life. Charles Vallow, Lori's husband, who was labeled as dark by the defendant, was shot and killed by Alex Cox in Arizona. Lori stood to gain $1 million, money that could fund Chad and Lori's future. Yet following Charles's death, Lori Vallow awaited a $1 million life insurance payout that never came, only to learn that the beneficiary was no longer her. Upon learning she would not receive that insurance money, Lori would text Chad, "I'll still get the $4,000 a month from SS, meaning Social Security." Chad replied to her in a text that read, "It will be interesting to see if it got changed after he had two bullets in his chest." Tylee Ryan, also branded dark and a zombie, was last seen on September 8, 2019. Subsequent investigations revealed the horrifying truth. Her remains, charred and dismembered, were found in a grave on Chad Daybell's property. Without Charles's $1 million in insurance money to support them, Lori Vallow continued to illegally receive Tylee's Social Security benefits, provided after the death of Tylee's biological father, who had been Lori's third husband. According to this defendant, J.J. Vallow, Lori's son, was also possessed. After he was labeled as a dark entity, his fate was no less tragic than his sister's. His young life was also blighted. Later, his bound body was discovered buried in Chad's backyard, his death by suffocation. Yet while JJ was missing, Lori continued to illegally receive JJ Social Security benefit, money provided by Charles Fallon's dad. Tammy Daybell, a vivacious, healthy mother, was another individual labeled as a dark spirit to be removed. On October 9th of 2019, she reported being shot at night near her home by a man covered in black. She thought it was a paintball gun. On October 19th, 10 days later, she died in her own home with her husband present. This was soon after an increase in the value of her life insurance to more than $400,000. This defendant rapidly cashed in that life insurance and began looking for condos in Hawaii with Lori. You'll see the rental application he submitted for a couple with no kids. Medical examiners would later determine that the only reasonable explanation for Tammy's death was not of natural causes, but rather a homicide. In fact, you will hear from multiple witnesses that Chad predicted multiple times that Tammy would die in early death. Chapter 5. 17 days after his wife's death, Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow got married and celebrated on a beach in Kauai, Hawaii, symbolizing what he called their eternal union. Chad and Lori were preparing their wedding well before Tammy's death. Lori was shopping for wedding rings while Tammy was still alive. Now, without the earthly obstacles of spouses and young children, and with Tammy's insurance policy and the children's social security funds, they could live the life that Chad and Lori wanted. Nothing was going to stand in their way. Chapter 6. Unfortunately for this defendant, reality soon shattered their bliss. Two things led law enforcement to his and Lori's door. On October 2nd, 2019, Lori Vallow's nephew-in-law, a man named Brandon Boudreau, was shot at in Arizona by someone from what he believed was Tyler's Jeep. Law enforcement in Arizona investigating Brandon's shooting contacted law enforcement in Fremont County, Idaho, to look for Alex Cox and for Tyler's Jeep. And you'll hear that Jeep was later found in Rexburg, Idaho, in Madison County. Meanwhile, J.J. Vallow's grandmother, concerned that she hadn't seen or heard from him in months, asked police for help. The police followed up and located Lori in Rexburg, Idaho, where the police did a welfare check at Lori's apartment. Law enforcement arrived at Lori's door on November 26, 2019. When asked about Lori, Chad first told law enforcement he didn't know her very well, despite the fact that they were married and had been in a relationship for over a year. Lies by Lori to police about JJ and Tylee's whereabouts, and then a move to Hawaii, and Lori's unwillingness to present her children to law enforcement to prove their well-being led to her arrest and extradition. As Lori refused to produce her children, law enforcement continued their search for Tylee and JJ. During that search, they located a unique text message that this defendant, Chad Daybell, had sent to his wife, Tammy, on September 9, 2019, which was the day after Tylee Bryant's last known appearance. You'll hear from the FBI agent who found that message, but this message seemed longer than his usual text to Tammy, and it had a more conversational tone. In that text, Chad claimed he'd had an interesting morning, that he'd shot a raccoon, that he'd buried it in what they called the pet cemetery, and that he'd had a fire on the property where he burned some limb debris. When law enforcement finally went to the defendant's property the following June, they didn't find a raccoon. They found Tylee's burnt remains were buried in the pet cemetery. And they found JJ nearby, buried under a tree near a pond. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been told this would be a lengthy trial. You will hear from many witnesses. You will hear a lot of evidence. You're going to hear a lot of dates. The following is just a timeline of major events to help understand when these things took place. October 26, 2018, Chad and Lauren meet in St. George, Utah. July 11, 2019, Charles Vallow, Lori's husband, is shot and killed by Alex Cox. Between August 31st and September 1st, Lori, Alex Cox, and Tyler and JJ moved to Rexburg, Idaho, just a few miles south of the defendant's home. Tylee's last known sighting was September 8, 2019. The text I just spoke of about the raccoon was sent by the defendant to his wife September 9, 2019. JJ's last known sighting you'll hear about September 22nd. The attempted homicide of Brandon Boudreau in Arizona was October 2nd. The shooting I mentioned of Tammy, the shooting at her, the unsuccessful shooting, October 9th, 2019. Tammy's death, October 19th, 2019. 17 days later, Chad and Lori marry in Hawaii. Law enforcement did a welfare check looking for JJ, November 26, 2019, in Rexburg, Idaho. November 26 and 27, Chad and Lori leave town. June 9, 2020, Tylee and JJ's remains are found on Chad's property. As I said, you're going to hear a lot of evidence from a lot of witnesses. And there's going to be kind of different groups of evidence you're going to hear from. You'll hear from law enforcement, some of whom will give you a broad overview of the investigation and what they did, how the search for Tylee and JJ turned them to a case of murder. You'll hear how it began by people who knew Lori and Chad, the James and Elena. You'll hear about the James and Elena story and about their relationship with each other and how they pursued their dream, their plan for a life together. You'll hear, in the defendant's own words, people referred to as obstacles, how they need to be gotten rid of. You're going to hear financial evidence. You'll hear from an FBI forensic accountant and a detective, a Social Security administrative investigator who will talk about the finances involved in this case. You'll hear more from law enforcement, from multiple law enforcement agencies, the Rexburg Police, the Fremont County Sheriff's Department, the FBI, Social Security Administration, about the investigation into these crimes. You will see forensic evidence. You'll see DNA testing to identify the body of Tylee. You'll see DNA testing that showed DNA from Tylee was found on at least two tools in the defendant's shed. You'll hear digital evidence dealing with geolocation data tied to certain phones that were used in this case. You'll hear from Hawaii law enforcement about searches they performed in Hawaii on the defendant and his wife. And finally, you will hear many of this defendant's own words. You will hear voice recordings of this defendant. You'll hear, recorded phone calls between him and his wife, Lori Daybell. You'll read multiple texts that he and Lori sent back, another text he sent. Chapter 9, What's Unwritten. The defendant stands before you today, charged with multiple crimes. First-degree murder for the death of Tammy Daybell. First-degree murder for the death of Tylee Ryan. First-degree murder for the death of J.J. Vallow. Conspiracy to commit murder of Tammy Daybell. Conspiracy to commit murder and grand theft by deception, the death of Tylee Ryan. Conspiracy to commit murder and grand theft by deception for the death of J.J. Vallow and insurance fraud. two dead children buried in this defendant's backyard. The next month, his wife, dead, in their bed. 17 days later, this defendant marries Lori Vallow. Members of the jury, days or probably weeks from now, when the evidence in this trial is fully unfolded, we will have the opportunity to speak with you again. And at that time, we will ask you to end this horrible narrative. Your verdict will be the link that writes the final chapter of this tragic saga, a chapter that delivers justice for Tammy, justice for JJ, and justice for Tyler. Thank you.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.